Hey everyone, welcome back. Ready for another deep dive? Today we are taking a look at modern couples.
Yeah, and we've got a whole bunch of sources to go through here.
Exactly. It looks like it's going to be super interesting, right? Because we are going to be going way beyond that, like the traditional image of a man and a woman, the typical couple.
And it's fascinating, really, how this whole idea of a couple is changing so quickly, it seems like. Just even in the past few years, the definition is constantly evolving.
And it makes you think, like, what does that even mean? What does couple mean now? So I'm excited to kind of unpack that with you.
Yeah, me too.
So let's just start at the beginning. The source kind of kicks it off by talking about the traditional model, the man and woman, often in a monogamous relationship, that kind of classic image. And I think it's useful to acknowledge that, right? That that model still exists for a lot of people, but it's definitely not the only game in town anymore.
No, not at all. And I think it's worth noting, right, that even though we call that the traditional model, there's a lot of change. Even within that, there's been a lot of change over time.
Like roles within a relationship,
Absolutely.
expectations. Definitely. So, okay, so that's kind of our starting point, but where does it go from there?
Well, so next it goes into same-sex couples.
And that's a big one, right? Because that's something that, even in recent history has really gained a lot more visibility and acceptance.
Absolutely. And it's interesting because the source does point out, even while we're talking about this growing acceptance, there are still specific challenges, that same-sex couples face that other couples don't necessarily have to deal with.
Exactly. So there are still like hurdles.
Big time. Legal hurdles.
And discrimination,
Exactly.
which is crazy to think about.
Oh, yeah. It's pretty disheartening to realize that even though we've come so far in terms of, recognizing these relationships and legalizing same-sex marriage in many places, there's still so much pushback.
And just that, fundamental, like these are people who are trying to build loving and committed relationships, just like anyone else.
And I think it's easy to forget sometimes, that when we talk about this, that there's a real social and political dimension to this whole thing. It's not just about relationships, it's about rights and equality.
Okay, so same-sex couples, check. What else?
So then the source moves on to talk about interracial couples.
And that's another one that I think has had a lot of challenges historically, right? Like just even from society, disapproval from families.
Prejudice. Discrimination.
The whole thing. And it's, it's crazy to think about in this, day and age. But it's definitely still a thing. But what was interesting that I saw in the source is that studies are showing that especially like younger generations are becoming more accepting.
Yeah, that's encouraged.
Like less hung up on the whole thing. So that's kind of promising, I guess.
It's a sign that things are moving in the right direction.
But even beyond that, like external kind of stuff, the source talks about some really unique internal hurdles that interracial couples might face.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Like bridging cultural differences.
Absolutely. Different ways of
Like life experiences that have shaped their worldview, things like that.
Different values, different expectations.
And you know what I thought was really cool that the source talks about is how a lot of successful interracial couples like actively engage with each other's cultures.
Oh, yeah, that's awesome.
Like they kind of create this blended world together, which I think is,
Beautiful.
like kind of romantic in a way, right?
Yeah, totally.
Okay, so we've talked about same-sex couples, we've talked about interracial couples. What's next? Where does it take us from here?
Well, next we go into long-distance relationships.
Ah, long distance. Okay, so it feels like everybody knows somebody who's in a long-distance relationship these days.
With the way,
Technology, jobs,
Remote work.
So much more common than it used to be. But the source doesn't sugarcoat it.
No.
It talks about loneliness, jealousy, insecurity.
Those are big ones.
So it's like it is tough. But I did think it was interesting how they talked about how technology can be both like a challenge and a savior.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Like it can create connection, but it can also fuel, you know, jealousy and insecurity.
Right.
You know, you're constantly kind of aware of what the other person is doing or not doing.
Yeah, that's true.
But what I thought was interesting that I had never really thought about before is that the source mentioned how long-distance couples who are successful, they often report higher levels of trust.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Right, and communication.
Interesting.
Compared to couples who are geographically close.
Yeah. I guess it makes sense because you have to be so intentional.
Exactly. You can't just rely on proximity.
Right, right.
You really have to work at it.
So I guess it kind of forces you to to develop those skills.
Right, exactly. Okay, buckle up.
What's next?
Yeah, because this one might be a little out there for some listeners.
Oh, boy.
Ready for it?
Yeah.
Polyamorous relationships.
Yeah, that's a whole other world, right?
Right.
Right.
And the source defines it as having multiple romantic or sexual relationships happening at the same time.
Okay.
With the full knowledge and consent of everyone involved.
Right. So it's not about, you know, cheating or deception.
No.
It's about being open and honest with everyone.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And that's key, right?
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Like everybody has to be on board with it. And even though it's, you know, gaining more visibility, the source points out that polyamorous couples often still face a lot of like social stigma.
Yeah.
And legal hurdles, even.
Right. Because the law, you know, tends to lag behind.
Yeah, it always does, doesn't it?
Yeah.
So it's not just about romantic love. It's about, you know, navigating those societal expectations and fighting for recognition.
Right. And I think that echoes back to what we were talking about.
Yeah.
With same-sex couples.
Exactly. It's like a theme.
Yeah, definitely.
That keeps topping up. And, you know, the source mentions that polyamory isn't just this one thing, right? Like, there are different ways to practice it.
Oh, okay.
You know, you can have a primary partner and then other relationships that are secondary.
Right.
Or you can have, like, a more fluid and open kind of arrangement.
Oh, I see.
So there's not, like, one right way to do it. It's about finding what works for the individuals involved, right? Yeah. And I think that's what's so important to remember is that every relationship is unique.
Right.
And what works for one couple might not work for another.
Totally. But again, it all comes back to that communication.
Right.
Like, clear communication is essential.
Oh, yeah. For sure.
Absolutely. Because otherwise, it's just going to, you know, create a whole bunch of problems.
Right. Misunderstandings.
Drama. Yeah. All the things you don't want in a relationship.
Exactly. So, yeah, communication is key.
All right. So, polyamory. Now, this is another one that's kind of in that same realm of challenging traditional relationships.
Okay.
Open relationships. Okay. Have you, are you familiar with this?
Oh, yeah. A bit.
So the source kind of positions it as similar to polyamory in some ways. But the big difference is that the focus remains on the primary couple.
Mm-hmm. Right.
But they've agreed to have casual or sexual relationships.
Okay.
Outside of that primary bond.
Oh, okay. I see. So it's like they're still committed to each other.
Right.
But they have this agreement to explore other connections.
Exactly. And again, it's all about setting those clear boundaries.
Yeah.
And expectations from the get-go.
Right.
So that nobody gets hurt.
Right, right. Because even with those boundaries, things can get messy.
Exactly.
You know, jealousy can still come up.
Right. And you still have to manage that.
Yeah.
Even if it's, you know, an agreed upon thing.
Right. So it's not a free pass to just, you know, do whatever you
want. Exactly. You still have to be mindful of your partner's feelings.
Yeah.
Communicate, you know, all the things.
It's still a relationship.
It is. It's still a relationship. So. Wow.
It's a lot.
Yeah. We've covered a lot of ground already. And it's amazing to see how diverse the landscape of modern relationships has become.
Yeah. It's really fascinating.
Right. Like, we've gone way beyond that traditional model.
Right.
And it's kind of exciting, I think.
Yeah, definitely.
To see all these different ways that people are finding love and commitment. But we're not done yet.
No, we're not.
We still need to talk about long-term committed relationships.
Right, right.
And how they fit into this whole evolving picture.
Yeah. Because that's another interesting one. Couples who choose not to get married.
Right.
But are still committed for the long haul.
Yeah, exactly. So that's coming up next. But we're going to take a quick break and we'll be right back.
Okay. Sounds good. All right. So we've looked at some relationships that are, you know, really pushing the boundaries of what's considered traditional.
Right.
But now let's talk about couples who are deeply committed, but they're not married.
Okay. Yeah. Long-term committed relationships.
Exactly. And I think this is particularly fascinating because, you know, it really makes you question, like, what does commitment even mean?
Right. Exactly. Because for so long, you know, it was marriage.
Right.
That was like the ultimate symbol.
Yeah, like the end goal. You know, you date, you get engaged, you get married, and that's it. But now it seems like more and more people are choosing to build a life together without that piece of paper.
Right. Like they're saying, hey, we're committed, but we don't need a ceremony or a legal document to prove it.
Exactly. And it makes you wonder, right, like what's driving this trend?
Yeah, like why are people doing this?
Well, the source mentions a few potential reasons. Some people just, you know, they don't believe in marriage.
Right.
It might not align with their values
mm-hmm.
or how they see their partnership. For others, it might be more of a practical thing.
Oh, yeah.
Like maybe they've had bad experiences with marriage in the past.
Right. Divorce or something like that.
Exactly. Or maybe they just see it as like an unnecessary legal entanglement.
Oh, okay. That makes sense.
Especially if they've already built a solid foundation together, financially and emotionally.
Right. They're like, why do we need this extra layer of, you know, bureaucracy?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So it's really interesting to see how the whole concept of commitment is becoming more personalized, I guess.
Right. It's like couples are defining it on their own terms.
Exactly. They're writing their own rule book.
Yeah, exactly. Which I think is really cool.
Yeah.
But I imagine that comes with its own set of challenges, right? Like society can be pretty judgmental sometimes.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. The source talks about how couples who choose not to get married often face a lot of pressure, especially from older generations.
Oh, right. Like, when are you guys going to tie the knot?
Exactly. Or don't you think it's time to make it official? That kind of thing.
Yeah. And it's like, come on. It's their choice, right?
Exactly. But those pressures, you know, they can really put a strain on a relationship.
Totally. And what was surprising to me that I learned in the source is that some long-term committed couples who choose not to get married, they actually face legal disadvantages.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Like things like inheritance rights or healthcare decision-making.
Wow. I never thought about that.
Right. It can get really complicated without that legal marriage contract. So it's like they're navigating this weird in-between space
mm-hmm.
where they're super committed, right, but they don't have the same protections and recognition as married couples.
It's almost like they're penalized for not conforming.
Yeah, exactly, which is kind of messed up. And it makes you think, right?
Yeah.
Like, how are our laws keeping up with these changing social dynamics?
Right. That's a good question. And it also raises the question of, like, how do we define family as a society?
Yeah. What does it even mean anymore?
Right. And how do we recognize different forms of commitment? Because mm-hmm. it's not just about romantic relationships,
yeah.
you know? It's about friends. It's about chosen families, all kinds of different connections.
That's like the whole definition of family is expanding, too.
Exactly. So it's a lot to think about. But you know what strikes me?
What's that?
It seems like no matter what kind of relationship you're in,
mm-hmm.
whether it's marriage, a same-sex partnership, polyamory, long-term commitment without a ring.
Yeah.
There are always challenges.
Right. It's just the flavor of the challenges that might differ.
Exactly. You know, every relationship has its own unique set of hurdles to overcome.
Totally. And that's where I think the source brings up something that's super relevant for everyone, no matter what their relationship status is.
What's that?
Couples therapy.
Oh, yeah. Therapy.
And I know, you know, some people might see that as like a last resort.
Right. Like something you only do when things are really bad.
Exactly. But the source actually frames it as a way to strengthen any relationship, not just one that's, you know, on the verge of collapse.
Oh, interesting. So it's like preventative maintenance.
Yeah, exactly. Like going to the gym for your relationship.
I like that. Keeping it healthy and strong.
Right. And it's not about fixing something that's broken. It's about investing in the growth and resilience of the relationship.
Makes sense. So what does the source say about, you know, different types of couples therapy?
Yeah, they actually go into detail about three specific types.
Okay.
And I have to admit, I didn't know much about them before this deep dive. So the first one is emotionally focused therapy, or EFT.
EFT. Okay. What's that all about?
Well, as the name suggests, it focuses on the emotional bond between partners.
Makes sense.
So it helps couples understand and express their emotions in a healthy way.
Okay.
Which is, you know, crucial for intimacy and resolving conflict.
Right. Because if you can't communicate your feelings, mm-hmm. you're never going to be able to work through a problem.
Exactly. So it's really about getting to the heart of the matter.
Yeah.
You know, what are the feelings that are driving the behaviors?
Yeah, that makes sense.
So EFT, that's one.
Mm.
The next one is... cognitive behavioral therapy. CBT.
CBT, I've heard of that before.
Yeah, it's used for a lot of different things. But in the context of couples therapy,
yeah,
it's all about identifying and changing negative thought patterns and behaviors that are contributing to problems in the relationship.
Oh, okay. So it's more about like practical skills and strategies.
Right. It's very action oriented.
Yeah.
So it's less about digging into the past and more about like giving couples tools to handle challenges in the present.
Okay. So it's like empowering them to make positive changes.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And the last type of therapy that the source mentions is called Imago Relationship Therapy.
Imago Relationship Therapy. That's a new one for me.
Yeah, me too. And this one's interesting because it takes a slightly different approach.
I so.
Well, it explores how our childhood experiences and past relationships
okay.
shape the way we interact with our partners today.
Oh, interesting. So it's like looking at the root of the patterns.
Yeah. It's about understanding those unconscious patterns that we bring into our relationships
mm-hmm.
and then learning to communicate in a way that fosters healing and connection.
So it's kind of like relationship archaeology.
Yeah, I like that. Uncovering the layers beneath the surface.
Cool. So we've got EFT, CBT, and Imago therapy. Those are the three main types that the source highlights.
Yeah. And it's important to note, you know, not all couples therapy is created equal. The source emphasizes that, you know, choosing the right type really depends on the couple's specific needs.
Oh, yeah. That makes sense.
Their goals, their personalities, all that kind of stuff. So it's about finding the right fit.
Right. The approach that resonates with both partners.
Right. Exactly. And, you know, just to reiterate, seeking couples therapy,
mm-hmm.
it's not a sign of failure.
No, definitely not.
It's actually a sign of commitment to the relationship.
Exactly. It's saying, hey, we care about this and we're willing to put in the work.
Exactly. All right. So we've covered a lot of ground here.
We have. From traditional couples to polyamory to therapy.
It's been a whirlwind.
Yeah.
But what are your main takeaways so far?
You know, for me, it's just amazing to see how diverse the world of relationships has become. Like, there's no one right way to do it anymore.
Totally. And I think that's really beautiful. But what I also find really interesting is that despite all these differences,
mm-hmm.
there are some common threads that run through all these variations.
Like what?
Well, communication.
Of course.
Respect.
Yeah.
A willingness to meet each other's needs.
Absolutely. Those are the foundations of any healthy relationship.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So it's like no matter what your relationship looks like,
mm-hmm.
those core principles still apply.
I agree. So I guess that brings us to a final question for our listeners.
Okay. Yeah. Hit us with it.
We've explored all these different types of couples and relationships, but at the end of the day, what do you think makes a relationship successful?
It's pretty amazing, right? Like all these different types of couples out there.
Yeah, it's eye-opening for sure.
Right. Makes you realize that, you know, the traditional model is really just one option.
Out of many, many options.
Exactly. What? And I think what's really cool is that it seems like this whole shift towards relationship diversity, it's not just about couples, you know?
No, it's bigger than that.
Right. Like it has implications for society as a whole.
Right. The challenges, you know, those old power structures.
Yeah. Like, what does it even mean to be a family now?
Right. It really pushes us to rethink those categories. And, you know, it forces us to be more inclusive
mm-hmm.
and accepting of, you know, different ways of being.
Yeah. I mean, it's like if we can be more open-minded about relationships, then maybe we can be more open-minded about everything.
Totally. It's all connected, right? Like the personal and the political.
Yeah, exactly. Okay. So as we wrap up this deep dive.
Yeah.
I want to leave our listeners with one final thought.
Okay.
We've talked about all these different types of couples, the challenges they face,
mm-hmm.
you know, the importance of communication, respect, all that good stuff.
Yeah.
But I think ultimately, you know, the most important relationship you'll ever have is the one with yourself.
Oh, I love that. That's so true.
Right. Because if you don't know yourself, if you don't understand your own needs and values,
yeah.
then it's going to be really hard to build a healthy and fulfilling relationship with anyone.
Absolutely. And it's about having the courage, right?
Yeah.
To create a life that feels authentic to you, even if it goes against, you know, what society expects.
Right. Even if it's different.
Exactly. So to our listeners, you know, as you continue on your own journey, whether you're single, partnered, married, polyamorous,
yeah,
whatever it looks like for you, remember to stay true to yourself.
That's the most important thing. Well, thanks for joining us on this deep dive. It's been a pleasure as always.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
And we'll catch you next time for another fascinating exploration.